Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Mining is Dead. Long Live Geopolitical Mining. Why Critical Minerals and Strategic Power Will Define the Next Global Order by Eduardo Zamanillo and Marta Rivera is a contemporary geopolitical and industrial strategy book about the rising strategic importance of critical minerals. Its subject is not mining as a narrow technical sector, but mining as a foundation of national power, economic security, technology leadership, defense capacity, and diplomatic leverage. The book argues that minerals such as copper and axed lithium, cobalt, rare earths, nickel, and graphite have moved from the background of industrial production to the center of global competition. Using a strategic lens and recent developments in supply chains, energy transition policy, and great power rivalry, it reframes mineral access, processing, legitimacy, and industrial coordination as core questions of sovereignty. Its purpose is to help policymakers, investors, analysts, and informed general readers understand why mineral strategy now shapes the next global order. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, critical minerals have shifted from commodities to strategic infrastructure. The central idea of the book is that the old understanding of mining as a mainly extractive, price-driven, and technically specialized activity is no longer adequate. Zamanillo and Rivera present critical minerals as infrastructure for modern power. Copper supports electrification and grids, lithium and graphite support batteries. Rare earths support advanced electronics and defense systems, and cobalt and nickel remain important in selected battery and industrial applications. This means mineral policy can no longer be separated from technology policy, energy policy, industrial policy, or security policy. The book emphasizes that the value of these materials is not only in the mine itself, but in the ability to connect extraction with refining, manufacturing, standards, finance, and reliable market access. A country may possess geological resources and still fail to convert them into influence if it lacks processing capacity, transport systems, regulatory credibility, and industrial partners. This framework makes the book broader than a mining sector analysis. It treats minerals as enabling systems that determine who can build batteries, semiconductors, electric grids, defense platforms, and artificial intelligence infrastructure at scale. Secondly, China illustrates the power of long-term supply chain engineering. A major thread in the book is the contrast between long-term industrial coordination and fragmented policy responses. The authors use Chinese strategy as a key example of how mineral influence is built through control over the middle of the supply chain, not only through ownership of mines. Chinese capacity in refining, processing, component manufacturing, and industrial integration has allowed the country to occupy powerful positions in rare earths, battery materials, and other strategic inputs. The point is not simply that China has resources, since many resources are located elsewhere. The point is that China treated minerals as part of a broader industrial system, linking overseas investment, processing expertise, infrastructure, manufacturing demand, and state-supported strategic planning. This gives the book a useful corrective to discussions that focus only on reserves or mine production. It shows that power emerges from the ability to transform raw materials into usable inputs for strategic industries. Western governments, in this reading, often recognized mineral dependence late and responded through slower permitting systems, fragmented funding, and policy debates that were not always matched by industrial execution. Thirdly, geopolitical mining requires active states, credible alliances, and faster execution. The book argues that governments cannot treat critical minerals as a purely private sector problem. Markets remain important, but the security relevance of mineral supply chains creates a role for states as strategic enablers, permitting reform, offtake support, infrastructure planning, diplomatic coordination, and alliances with countries that hold resources or processing potential. The authors highlight speed as a decisive factor because mining, refining, and industrial deployment often take longer than the political cycles that shape policy. A government that identifies a vulnerability but cannot finance projects, coordinate agencies, or build public consent may remain dependent despite recognizing the problem. The book also stresses that alliances are not symbolic. They must connect geology, capital, processing expertise, infrastructure, and end market demand. Strategic partnerships that do not solve bottlenecks in refining, standards, or logistics have limited value. This topic gives the book a practical orientation. It presents mineral security as a coordination challenge in which state capacity, industrial policy, and private investment must align before mineral wealth can become usable power. Fourthly, regional mineral power depends on governance as much as geological wealth. Zamanillo and Rivera place regional differences at the center of their analysis. Africa. Latin America, Europe, the United States, China, and parts of Asia appear not as interchangeable resource zones, but as regions with distinct institutional strengths and constraints. Africa holds major mineral potential, including cobalt, copper, graphite, manganese, and other resources, but faces governance, infrastructure, coordination, and illegal mining challenges that can weaken bargaining power. Latin America is presented as highly important for copper, lithium, and other minerals, yet often fragmented by national policy differences, social conflict, and limited regional coordination. Europe has strategic demand and regulatory ambition, but faces resource constraints, permitting difficulties, and dependence on external supply chains. The United States is described as trying to rebuild industrial capacity and reduce vulnerabilities through public instruments and strategic investment. This regional lens is important because it avoids a simple resource nationalism argument. Possessing minerals does not automatically produce sovereignty. Countries must convert geology into credible institutions, infrastructure, processing capacity, social legitimacy, and negotiating leverage. The result is a more realistic map of mineral power. Lastly, legitimacy and narrative are treated as strategic assets in mining. One of the more distinctive elements of the book is its attention to legitimacy. The authors argue that mineral strategy is not only about deposits, investment, and technology. It also depends on whether societies accept mining as necessary, fair, and connected to a larger public purpose. This matters because mining projects often face environmental concerns, community opposition, land use conflicts, and mistrust of both companies and states. In a geopolitical mining framework, legitimacy becomes a form of strategic capacity. Projects delayed by weak consultation, poor governance, or unclear public value can undermine national supply chain goals, even when the geology is favorable. The book also treats narrative as more than public relations. The stories governments and companies tell about mining can shape consent, investment confidence, and international credibility. A credible narrative must connect mineral development to standards, benefits, security, and long-term industrial purpose. For companies, this means the role is no longer only technical execution. They must become strategic navigators that manage geopolitical risk, community trust, regulatory standards, and partnership expectations. In conclusion, mining is dead. Long-live geopolitical mining is best suited for readers who need a structured way to understand why critical minerals now appear in debates about defense, clean energy, artificial intelligence, tariffs, industrial policy, and diplomatic competition. Policymakers can use it to think beyond mine approvals and toward integrated mineral strategies that include processing, finance, alliances, and legitimacy. Investors and analysts can benefit from its emphasis on bottlenecks, regional risk, and the difference between resource ownership and strategic control. Journalists, researchers, and general readers interested in geopolitics will find it useful because it explains mineral competition without reducing the issue to commodity prices or energy transition. Slogans. What differentiates the book from many works in the same category is its deliberate combination of mining expertise, geopolitical framing, and attention to narrative legitimacy. Books on critical minerals often focus on scarcity, environmental trade-offs, or China-related supply risks. This book stands out by arguing that the decisive issue is the transformation of mining into an integrated field of power, where speed, standards, public trust, industrial policy, and supply chain architecture all matter. Its main benefit is conceptual clarity. It gives readers a vocabulary for understanding minerals as instruments of sovereignty rather than background inputs to modern industry. If you would like to support Eduardo Zimanillo, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.